And Dr. Michael Van Stratton joins us. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Lovely to have you on. And we're starting off today talking about fire hazard in skincare products.
Yeah, this is the most extraordinary story, which, I mean, I never thought of. It never crossed my mind until I came across a piece of research originally done thanks to the BBC. Mm. There was a fire department up in the north of England who reported that, in fact, there were something like 37 deaths linked to skin creams containing paraffin in England in the last few years. Wow. And it's certainly, they think, many more that have never been actually reported or discovered. And the problem is that nearly all of the emollient skin creams, the things that are used medically for, you know, people who've got bad eczema or psoriasis and dry skin, but also most of the over-the-counter sort of moisturising creams, all contain paraffin. And that paraffin, it gets into your clothes, it gets into your bed linen, and, you know, if you don't change your bed linen that often, or you've got, like, a favourite pullover that you wear all the time, they become saturated with paraffin. And what you're actually doing is turning your body into a sort of a human firelighter.
Well, I didn't know that, because I'm not a massive, if you looked at me, you'd know I'm not a massive skin cream fan. I wasn't aware of that there was even paraffin in those skin creams. So it's quite amazing that in this day and age that can pass to be sold.
Well, exactly. And the thing is that it's a very effective emollient for dry, sore skin. And it's used in many, many of these products, all sorts of them. And since this was discovered, manufacturers have been encouraged to put fire hazard warnings on the labels. But only a handful of them have actually done it. These are the sort of pharmaceutical, chemical, you know, prescription products. And all the over-the-counter products, well, they're a bit different. They're organised by something called the PAGB, the Proprietaries Association of Great Britain. It's a sort of representative body for all the over-the-counter remedies. And they say that since this came to light, most of the manufacturers are getting into the realm of putting these labels on. I don't think they all have them yet. But it's a really, you know, it's a salutary warning. According to the fire experts, the fire brigade experts, you know, it only takes just a few sparks to drop off your cigarette end if you're sitting up smoking in bed, or, you know, sitting in your armchair reading a paper, smoking a fag, and the end drops off onto your pulley, onto your girl favourite sweater that's got lots of paraffin absorbed into it from the skin creams, and whoosh, you go up in smoke. And it's really absolutely terrifying, and it never ever occurred to me. But just a warning to all our listeners, if you're using those sort of creams, firstly look on the label and see if it contains paraffin, because it will say that in the ingredients. But more to the point, you know, if you're using those sort of creams, don't smoke in bed, which you shouldn't ever do anyway. Be very, very careful and wash your clothes much more often than you've been in the habit
absolutely.
Of doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, a welcome warning there and a timely one. Thank you for bringing that one, Michael. It's something that never really crossed my radar before, but an interesting one. Moving on to our second one today, there are some foods that you should always try to buy organic. Those highest in chemical residues can be linked to ADHD and other things you're going to mention in a moment. So which sort of foods are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about all the pesticide residues.
Mm.
And the pesticides and the insecticides, which, you know, I've been banging on ever since we first spoke about the importance of organic food. I know it's always a bit more expensive, but there are some things which you really, really, really ought to put on your priority list, especially if you've got any sort of chronic health problem, if you've got any sort of immunity problems, and particularly if you're feeding children. because these are the sort of chemicals that really can cause serious problems.
Yeah.
Like, as you mentioned, ADHD. They can lower the sperm counts in men. They can make women less fertile. We know that many of them are what are called endocrine disruptors. They interfere with the body's hormone systems. And many of them can equally, we think, be directly linked to some forms of cancer. And it's a really worrying story. And just recently, in the last week or two, there's been a published list of what are considered to be the dirty dozen, the worst of the foods, particularly fruits and vegetables, that contain the highest levels of residues. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but top of the list are strawberries.
And particularly, I like strawberries.
Yeah, we all like strawberries, but particularly the huge industrial crops like you get in Spain are the worst. They have the most residues of pesticides. Next along the list is spinach. You know, I keep telling people, eat spinach, it's really healthy. No, Popeye was wrong. You can't get iron from the spinach. There's lots in it, but you can't get it out. But it's a rich, rich source of beta-carotene, which the body turns into vitamin A, one of the essential vital nutrients. But spinach is number two. Nectarines are number three. Apples are number four. Peaches number five. Pears, cherries, grapes, celery, surprisingly. Celery is a really, really nasty one. It contains lots of these horrible chemicals. Tomatoes, again, we're talking about Spanish, huge Spanish production.
Yeah.
Sweet peppers, and even potatoes and hot chili peppers are, number 13. That's the baker's dozen on the list.
It's interesting, and, Michael, because there's a lot of things, of course, which we need to eat for a healthy lifestyle. And like you say, there's a reason why these chemicals are used, and it's for production purposes, and it's money, of course. What's going to be the tipping point? What's going to be the turning point on this? Is it footfall, basically people buying more organic fruit is actually going to win the day at the end, if that ever happens?
Well, it is happening, for sure. Certainly, it's been going on for years in the UK, a growing organic movement, started originally by the Soil Association back in the 40s, I think. But here in France, there are growing numbers of organic producers. Just in, I live in this tiny village in the Loire, Le Loire, not La Loire, where all the chateaus are, but Le Loire, Sarthe region of France, in central France. And, I mean, on my doorstep, I know half a dozen horticultural farms, horticulturalists, where I can go to the farm gate and buy organic produce. There's a growing number of organic wine producers, although sadly they've really suffered. They had a really bad harvest last year, and the prices of organic wine are going to be rocketing up. But as well as that, there's a whole movement in the Loire Valley, where I live, of sustainable wine producers. Wine producers who are, they call it reasonable agriculture. It's not totally 100% organic, but they use the absolute minimum of chemicals and make maximum use of the best traditional cultivation processes. You know, they look after the soil, they use natural products, they encourage the beneficial insects like ladybirds and the like, which actually feed off the insects that do the damage.
So it's great. So, Michael, we've got a caller on the line. Have me live on TRE. Who's calling?
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call,
Dave
and Michael. Just a quick question. Michael, I understand that if you wash things, we eat a lot of nectarines and peaches in the summertime. How much does washing get rid of these pesticides? I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you. Okay, Michael, you heard the question there. Any use in washing it?
Unfortunately, not a great deal. With the harder fruits, you can wash them in tepid, slightly warm, soapy water. Put a squirt of dishwasher liquid in and really scrub them with a brush or one of those scouring pads. That will get off most of what's on the surface. But a lot of the chemicals end up actually in the skin. And if you're looking at things like spinach and like celery, it actually ends up
inside
the produce.
Yeah, that's the problem.
It's better to wash them than not wash them. But sadly,
damage is done.
You won't get rid of all the dangerous stuff. And particularly, you won't get rid of what are called the glyphosates. These are the horrible things that are so controversial in Europe at the moment. You know, the manufacturers, the huge chemical companies, spend millions and millions and millions of euros every year lobbying the European Parliament.
That's what we're up against, though, Michael. But and like you said, there is hope because there's a change in mentality that I'm coming across even amongst people I know, and that is that they are going to go buy organic. The thing that's on my mind is when I go into a supermarket, and really you have to go to some of the bigger ones to get, I mean, you do get a better variety in the bigger supermarkets. When you see something that's labelled organic, how do we know, because we weren't there when it was picked or when it was grown, that that's organic? Well, is that a law that has to be fulfilled?
It is. It is firstly the equivalent European-wide of the Trade Descriptions Act, and they cannot label something organic if it isn't. Mm. I mean, of course, there are always scandals,
yep.
But generally speaking, the major supermarkets are not going to risk their reputation and risk getting caught out by selling things as organic that aren't. I mean, this is much more likely to happen in your small corner shop. Although the supermarkets have other problems. I mean, you know, in France, we've had the terrible scandal of contaminated baby milk going on for months now. One of the biggest, Lactalis, the biggest producer of baby milk, I think, in Europe. All five of their factories have been affected, and they try to cover it up, and there's been all sorts of parliamentary inquiries in France. These things happen. We've had, you know, the horse meat scandals in the big English supermarkets. So you can never be 100% sure, but all bio-organic products have to have the organic label. In the UK, the Soil Association label is the most effective.
Yeah.
But the EU organic mark, which should be put on all the products that are sold as organic, they do have a very strict inspection regulation. They have a very strict limit to what sort of products can be used and what can't be used, and if it's got some products on it, can't be sold as organic. The same, of course, with dairy products, and that's another whole area, of course, which is very, very important in terms of pesticide, and particularly with poultry, the horrible problem of bacterial resistance of salmonella, and because of that, they feed antibiotics into the feed, which they shouldn't be doing. But, you know, if you're importing your eggs from parts of Eastern Europe, which are supposedly part of the common market, but who enforces the regulations in Eastern European countries, we don't know, and we don't think it's very good. The strict control of the regulations, we just don't know. And the answer, if you can do it, is find your local organic grower. They will be certified. They will have a certificate that says they are guaranteed to be organic. When I was had a small horticultural holding in the UK many years ago, I started an organic holding in 1969, that long ago.
Wow.
But then, at any time, the Soil Association inspectors could just arrive and go poking around. And if they found a can of insecticide spray in your potting shed, that was the end of that. You lost your license.
Well, fair enough. I mean, because that's the problem, isn't it? And I think bottom line is that I'm hoping that there'll be a sea change in the fact that people will want to buy organic. And actually, because these businesses are not interested in our health at all. They're interested in their shareholders' financial bank accounts. And so the bottom line is, until it starts hitting them in the pocket, we're not going to see a change. And so it's down to the individual going and buying organic food, isn't it? Michael, we're going to move on because of time. Final one today, gluten-free water. A gluten-free shampoo. Before we get onto that, we've got a caller on the line. Good afternoon, you're live on TRE. Hello.
Hello, it's me again. Well, to compliment Michael on his very, very handsome dad, whose orchestra played at my wedding in 1961.
Oh, wow. So, Michael, there you go.
No, for his small holding in 1969.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, But the Van Stratton Orchestra was not part of my family. That was another family of Van Strattons. And the strangest thing was that when I met one of the Van Strattons from the orchestra family, and I said, look, you know, I'm really fed up with everybody saying to me, am I the relation of the band leader? And he said, well, it's just the same for me. He said, I get fed up with asking me if I'm Dr. Garlic.
Oh, never mind. There we go. So he's never been in the band, but he is good with nutrition.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for your call. All right. Right then. Gluten-free water, gluten-free shampoo. Where's it all going to end? And just to put on this one quickly, Michael, I think last time we were talking, somebody in the Mijas area who was about to have a child had a professional come round and test the tap water, and the tap water's fine to drink for children and for anybody. I was watching somebody on Facebook this very week talking about how bad the tap water is in Spain, and it's, from what I know, is unfounded again. It's just people making stuff up. But interesting, Michael, all this stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And who's making up those stories? People who want to sell you bottled water.
And also they want to sell you their books as well, and this is how to fight this, that and the other. And it's propaganda. It's scare. Some of it's very scaremongering. It's going into chemtrails and how the government wants to.
Oh.
And you know this story that came out the other day about illness and disease that can be taken around on the sea, and it be in the air. Well, that was a government conspiracy. From what I can gather, it's just scientific fact.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, it's a fact. But the problem is that, sadly, the public are very gullible. The public are always looking for the magic bullet, right?
Yeah.
The one answer. So if they've got a chronic disease, which is going to involve maybe chemotherapy for their cancer or surgery, or if they've got an incurable disease or a child with an incurable disease, they will troll the internet and find the most bizarre, most ridiculous things which they will be persuaded are better for them. It's like the anti-vaccination campaigners. Now, I'm not in favour of unnecessary vaccination, but if you don't vaccinate your child against measles and German measles and whooping cough and tuberculosis, I mean, I've seen these diseases when I was a student. I've seen wards full of children coughing and coughing and coughing and dying from whooping cough. I've seen children who became sterile, boys who became sterile after getting mumps. You know, girls who weren't vaccinated against German measles. Not only are they a risk to themselves, because if they're pregnant and they get German measles, it desperately affects the baby. It causes terrible birth defects. But also, if you're not vaccinated, you are a carrier, and you get a pool of carriers, and they will give these infections to all of the rest of the population. Now, you know, if you don't live in an area where there is yellow fever, you don't want a yellow fever vaccine. You don't. You know, but if you live in Central Europe, where we have seen in France this year a large outbreak of measles, hundreds of children with measles, it shouldn't happen. And measles is a serious, life-threatening illness for children. I mean, and people believe, and it's the same with this whole thing about the water you talked about. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. But now there are adverts for gluten-free water. You know, I've even seen a water publicist publicising some very special water, you know, which they sell at like £3, £4 a bottle. Not only is it gluten-free, but they guarantee there is no GMO ingredients in the water. Well, of course there aren't. And I've just seen there's a campaign for a new load of hair care products on British television.
Yeah.
And They hook it on to the fact that their products are gluten-free. Gluten-free shampoo, for God's sake. But people will, you know, who think they've got a gluten allergy, you know, will go out and buy these things.
You're not going to eat this stuff. Yeah.
You're not going to eat this stuff. And, you know, all this stuff about the clean eating, the macrobiotic, the paleo diet. It's a madness. Human beings today will not survive on a paleo diet. Don't forget, most of the paleolithic men and women died before they got to 30. So that diet wasn't much good for them, was it? You know? And yet people promote it. They promote books about it. They promote supplements for it. They promote gluten-free for everything.
And it becomes fashionable. I mean, veganism is fashionable at the moment, isn't it, as well?
Oh,
and
it worries me. There's a whole range of vegan food supplements now available, and specially made vegan
Big
foods.
Money, big money.
It's huge money. You only have to look at the big supermarkets. Look, when I was first involved in the whole world of natural medicine, the only place you could buy vitamin pills, other than maybe a vitamin B12 at the chemist, but back in the 50s and 60s, the only place you could buy yogurt, muesli, vitamin pills, herbal medicines, was the health food store. But as those sales became bigger and bigger and bigger, the supermarkets and the pharmacists jumped onto the bandwagon. And as a result of that, you got very poor quality products at very expensive prices, all aimed at the bottom line, the profit that they can get out of it. I urge people, please, please, unless you have celiac disease, nobody needs a gluten-free diet. If you have celiac disease, it's life and death.
Yeah.
For some people who have irritable bowel syndrome, but only for some, a gluten-free diet may help. But if you've got IBS and you try a gluten-free diet for 3 or 4 weeks and it doesn't make you any better, give it up.
Yeah.
It won't, eating gluten won't make your IBS worse unless you are part of that very small proportion of IBS sufferers who are sensitive to gluten.
So take your doctor's advice on it, yeah.
Well, gluten-free diets are actually unhealthy diets because you cut out all the gluten-containing cereals, you lose a huge amount of nutritional value. And you can't make it up very easily. It's really difficult.
Mm.
In the same way as it's really difficult to be a healthy vegan. And I think impossible to bring up a child as a vegan. Because
they need the calcium from the milk.
Well, not only that, they need the omega-3 fatty acids. And no matter what the vegans tell you, all the science shows that you cannot get enough of that from vegan sources, from vegetable sources.
Well, Michael, we're out of time, I'm afraid, but we've had a good, I think we're about 25 minutes, we've actually left some people fuming and others shouting amen, brother. But we'll leave it there. Michael, if anybody wants to find you online and get some more information from you and some diet plans and some great balanced diets and so on and food and nutrition, how can they do that?
Just have a look at my website. It's Michael Van Stratton, all one word, .com. And everything's free. There's recipes, there's remedies, there's case histories of illnesses and stuff. But it's all... no miracles, no fads, no crazy things, basic, common, good nutrition, good common sense, and letting nature help itself where possible.
Absolutely.
But it isn't always the answer. Sometimes, we need the surgery, we need the medicaments, we need the more powerful drugs. And if you need them, you've got to take them.
Common sense. Michael, thank you. We'll speak again soon. You take care.
My pleasure. Bye.
Dr. Michael Van Stratton there.